Sportscast World Cup coverage on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. Sportscast World Cup coverage. Analyze and preview all the games of the World Cup here on the Sportscast. Sportscast World Cup coverage. And here's your host, Santiago Leal.
Welcome to the Sportscast World Cup coverage, November 29th, 2022. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you're listening on our podcast, your favorite Apple Podcast, Spotify, please leave a rating and review. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. Also, you can dial on our app, the Sportscast, for notifications. And also, you could go to our website, thesportscast.net, for all the latest in sports. USA has made it to the round of 16 of the World Cup by defeating Iran 1-0. They got out of the group second place with 5 points, and the USA is relieved. They made it out. And join us today, Mr. Hal Phillips, author of Generation Zero. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thanks, Santi. What a day. What an afternoon.
What afternoon. I just came back from a pub nearby, 20 minutes. It was stacked. Everyone was like thrilled we scored the first goal, but second half of the game, I thought we were kind of like, oh, we're playing defensive. Greg Berhalter is putting a if defender with Zimmerman. But what were your thoughts over the match? Your recap.
Well, let's get wonky right away. They played an outstanding first half. Again, they were clearly the better team. They scored 2 goals. The second one, they did not allow. I'm still trying to figure out why that was. It was a clean goal, and VAR is supposed to look at those things, especially at the end of a half when both teams were almost walking off the field. There's no problem in checking that out and awarding the goal. But anyway, the second half was really an issue of what happens when Weston McKennie goes off the field. Until he left on the 65th minute, they had this game well in hand, and they were still pinging the ball around the midfield. When he went off, that stopped, and Acosta came on. Now, I like Kellen Acosta. He can do some things, but the minute he comes in, they lose their spark. He does not have confidence on the ball. He's not going forward at all, and they just start booting it, and it got worse from there. That was the issue. How do they deal with the fact that Weston McKennie can't play 90 minutes? He's not fit enough to do that. It wasn't that they packed it in, you know, and tried to hang on. They just could not replicate what they did without McKennie on the field.
Yeah, McKennie was subbed out for, I think it was with Kellen, was it Kellen? Yeah, Kellen Costa in the 65th minute. But let's go back to, it was on the 30th minute. It was an assist by Sergiño Dest. They were going back and forth. Sergiño Dest passed the ball into the middle of the eight, and Pulisic slid in and scored. But then he got hurt. Apparently, was a abdominal injury. What were your thoughts over the goal? It was ugly, but they got it done.
Well, it was an ugly finish, but it was a beautiful play, and it was Weston McKennie sending Dest in over the top with a beautiful spun ball that hit softly, and Dest knocked it right across, and there was Pulisic, who beat two guys to the spot. It was a great goal. They could have had a couple other goals if they could keep their knee over the ball, but Timmy Weah and others just skied the ball over the bar a couple of times. Look, they played a great first half. Iran really could not cope with them. So I don't think we have any, you know, we have no complaints about how they played the first half against Wales. We have no complaints about the way they played the first half against Iran. I'll give Iran credit for not packing it in. They wanted to do things, but they just could not cope. Nobody in this tournament has been able to cope with our midfield. When you add Dest on one side and Anthony Robinson on the other side, that unit of five is really an engine to be admired. They ping the ball around. They're faster and more athletic than everybody they've faced, and they have confidence on the ball. When that unit is broken up, as it has been at the end of all three games because of fatigue, or just general subbing, this team is just not the same. And Berhalter's got to figure out some way to cope with that. And I'll just suggest that instead of going defensive with Acosta, on that sub. He should have brought Reyna in, and they would have continued to go forward. That's how you kill a game off. You go forward.
Yeah, Reyna was not subbed in at all. He was subbed in for the England match, but did not come in at all, which is kind of strange. Did you hear about the whole Eric Winalda situation that he talked about on XM Radio? That I guess, well, he's friends with Collier Reyna, which is the father of Gio Reyna, saying that, I forgot how it went. I think that Berhalter didn't want to play him because he was injured, or like Gio lied because he's injured and whatnot. But what were your thoughts over Eric Winalda's stint?
Well, Eric Winalda is trying to increase his media profile, and I think this is an issue that he's latched onto. Winalda knows Claudio Reyna, but you know who knows Claudio Reyna far better? Greg Berhalter. They went to high school together. I don't think there's a rift there. And the idea that Berhalter would ask Gio Reyna to lie and tell people he wasn't fit to cover, that makes no sense to me. I don't know where that came from. It seems like a pretty desperate ploy from a pundit to me. Look, it's not any kind of conspiracy. For the first time ever, the U.S. national team has offensive options like a team like England has or France has. And when that is the key, when that's the case, you have to make choices. And people like Aronson and Reyna don't get 90 minutes or don't get to start. That's just the fact. Now, you can talk about alignment. We can talk about withdrawn nines and Jesus Ferreira and Haji and Sargent. But, you know, Berhalter has a system he wants to play. He may not be able to play it against the Netherlands, frankly, because of injury. So we're going to finally see some flexibility, I hope. But I think that we can boil the situation down to a simple matter of Berhalter not wanting to continue to play offensively for the last 25 minutes of that game. If you had put Reyna in for McKennie, the whole game changes. But it changes in a good way. We are not falling back. We're going forward. And I don't think Iran would have given us any trouble if we had done that. They were not in this match. We ceded the last half an hour to them, and even then, they generated one chance.
Yeah. Josh Sargent came off injured a bit. Looks like he has a serious leg injury. Don't know what's going to happen for the next game against the Netherlands. But Haji Wright came in looking to sub Brendan Aaronson. What were your thoughts over his performance? He came in with four Pulisic.
Look, for whatever reason, Aaronson has not done a lot in this World Cup. He's gotten more of a chance than Reyna. He has come on in offensive positions, but has not been able to impact the game. Look, it happens. But I think it is a worry that this team seems to really be together and have cohesion and intent when it comes to the starting 11. But when they start subbing people in, they're not matching anywhere near that kind of performance and cohesion. So I love Brendan Aaronson. I wish there was a way we could get him on the field and Reyna, you know, in a way that advances our cause instead of, you know, hurts it and deforms it. And it's just a weird situation. You'd think that they really want to bring Acosta in a game that they're winning. And I get why that is, but as soon as you bring Acosta in, They're not a unit in the middle of the field that can control the ball or take the ball forward. They don't have it in them. And you can see the confidence waning with every passing minute in the second half. Nobody wanted the ball at their feet anymore, whereas over the first 65 minutes of that half, they loved having it at their feet.
One change for the starting lineup was Carter Vickers starting over Emmerman. Your thoughts over his performance? I thought he did well.
He did great. He and Ream are a fine partnership. I think that I don't want to crap on Zimmerman. I thought that he had played two pretty good games before this, and you know, one rash tackle against Wales does not a failure make. And but Carter Vickers, I heard Berhalter explain. They said, look, this guy plays in the Scottish League, where Celtic has a lot of the ball. He's used to having to knock the ball around and probe and, you know, deal with teams that are parking the bus on you. I thought that made a world of sense. And he didn't miss a trick in this game. He's a little like Jay DeMeritt. And for old timers who might remember, he's not the tallest guy, which is a little weird because he's the son of Howard Carter, who was a very good Division I basketball player at LSU, who's about 6'5". So if this guy was sick, you know, Zimmerman size, he'd be all world. But he's sort of a chunky, hard man, but he can run. And he really did not put a foot wrong in this game. I was impressed.
We got a comment from Facebook. Gregorio Benforte says, Haji was useless, as was Shaq. Your thoughts on that?
You know, Shaq comes in. Let's defend Shaq. Shaq came into the game when everything was falling apart. And there were now five guys in the defense. There's no shape to that. It's pure survival. And I think no one told him that cross that came over, no one told him that he had time to bring it down. He's basically a World Cup knockout game. So I don't blame him for not hearing that. I have no problem with Shaq. He did his job. Haji is a little weirder. I like Haji Wright. I thought he played well against England. Held his own. For whatever reason, he was like a deer in the headlights tonight. He really was not up to the task. Didn't seem to realize what was happening. You know, he bore in on goal that one time and almost scuffed it, but really should have peeled off into the corner and held the ball because they didn't need another goal. But didn't really chase with any great vigor, even though he was fresh. It was not a convincing performance from Haji Wright. And get ready, soccer Twitter, because if Sargent is out, Jesus Ferreira is probably going to start against the Netherlands.
Which I thought he was going to start today, Hal, and didn't happen. Went back to, you know, to Josh Sargent. Not surprised. I think Berhalter likes Sargent, but he might not be able to use him for the game against Netherlands.
That was a bad injury. It looked like he hyperextended his knee, you know, popped it the wrong way. So I wouldn't be surprised if he were not available. Look, these injuries may work to our advantage, and I'm hoping that Berhalter sees it that way. I think that the midfield issue is the biggest problem when it comes to, you know, taking McKennie off, because, you know, Musa was absolutely gassed at the end of that game, but they had nobody to come in for him. I would have put Cannon in for him just because he would be been able to chase. But let me go back to the original thought was, the injuries up top are going to get Aronson and Reyna on the field in some way, shape, or form, because I don't know if Pulisic can go, and I don't think Sargent can go, and Haji Wright did not cover himself in glory. So, you know, this is why you have subs, and let's hope we can do it. Oh, look at that awesome picture of Pulisic.
Yeah, so there is an Instagram photo from Pulisic's IG account. It says, so effing proud of my guys. I'll be ready for Saturday. Don't worry. So apparently he might be playing Saturday.
Well, I thought this has happened to me, and I've seen it happen to others. You go off at halftime after someone takes a shot there in the midsection, let's call it, and they piss a little blood, and they got to go get a scan because you don't know what's going on in there. And I thought that's maybe what happened. But then someone said, oh, maybe he cracked a rib. It seemed a little low for that. Who knows? Maybe I'm hoping they're just being careful because they are obviously not the same team without him. But, of course, if he starts, then all the play Reyna people will be freaking out.
Yeah, he looked pretty shaken up. It took him a few minutes to get up, I thought. So I thought, you know, something really bad happened. But, all I heard it was the just some stomach injury or some injury. So this was the offside that was called. It could have been 2-0. But now looking from this photo, it could be offside, I guess.
It was a clean goal. And I had people who aren't massive soccer fans, not a great deal of technical knowledge, emailing me saying, how come they didn't VAR that? How come they didn't look at that? It wasn't like they were in the middle of the half even. I mean, it would not have been a big deal to take a few seconds. And you could tell that the Iranians wanted to start the restart very quickly because they knew it was clean. So that was a 2-0 performance in the first half. We only got credit for one.
Yeah, it happens. Things call. And remember, these offside calls are pretty calculated with the ball chip, cameras everywhere. So it's pretty – well, maybe Hal doesn't agree. Not sure if you agree Ronaldo scored that goal yesterday.
I don't care who scored it. It went in.
It went in, exactly. So – the next opponent, like Greg says, is Holland this weekend, which I agree. They might be a little bit easier than England, but Holland is a beatable team. I agree with Greg. Your thoughts over this weekend's match?
Well, they're not as good as England. They have a different sort of midfield. Frankie de Jong with Barcelona really runs that show and drops very deep to get the ball. And if you try to take it away from me, just drops deeper and deeper right into the back four and takes from there. But the one thing that I think the Dutch are used to having an advantage in that they won't is they're athletic. They run. And their midfield is a little less plodding than England's. And I don't think that we can, we don't have to worry about, you know, being out, you know, outrun by anybody in this tournament. That our midfield is young and strong for 60 minutes, as long as McKennie's on the field, very capable. They're tough on the wings. And I was talking about this during the game. You know, our midfield unit includes Robinson and Dest. They step up into the play a lot. And that means that we are pinning opposing wing midfielders and fullbacks back. And I'm not sure that we're going to be able to do that with such success against the Dutch. They have very, very skilled outside people too, also liking to go forward. So that'll be a fascinating matchup. But we can play with the Dutch. I mean, I think that the game against England showed that we can play with anyone and generate chances to score. You know, we just haven't potted a bunch of them. So, yeah, you could argue that we're due.
Yeah. Netherlands have won Group A. They were top group. Then it was Senegal, who came in and beat Ecuador last minute, kind of. And then, of course, Qatar finished last place and Ecuador third place. So quite impressive with Group A. Before we get into that result, England beating Wales 3-0. Would you say Wales was probably the worst team in this group?
Yeah, they were, a fun team. They did well just to qualify. We should have been 2 or 3 nil up on them in the first half. That was the only point they got, and we handed it to them. I did watch the Senegal-Ecuador match, and all credit to Senegal. That was a really great game. They took the lead, and Ecuador never gave up, came back and tied it, and that game was on a knife edge, and Senegal just came right back down the field and scored again. And you could tell Ecuador, all the wind went out of their sails. It was a dagger, as they say, but a really impressive performance. All of it done without Sadio Mane.
Yeah. Two goals by Kalidou Koulibaly. And of course Ecuador had Moises Caicedo that scored. No Inter Valencia to save him. Everyone was shouting Ecuador, Inter Valencia, you know, maybe Valencia might win the golden boot, but that is stopped at 3. So we'll see what happens with Ecuador's future. Inter Valencia is 31, so had a good performance, but Africa, the African team definitely stood out. And hey, Mane is saying, man, I might have a chance, but no, but he's out of the squad.
I haven't heard that. He's not coming back, is he? I mean, okay.
Benzema is actually technically in the squad, so if he becomes 100% healthy, well, not 100%, near healthy, he could come back, but I don't want to ruin the chemistry of France if things are doing well.
Oh, they'll play Benzema if they have him.
Why not? He's Ballon d'Or winner, you know?
They're so deep. I mean, I love the way people were downplaying France's chances because they were so banged up. And, you know, France has three teams they could put in this World Cup and be competitive. They're so deep, so talented. Half their guys aren't even playing well, guys like Griezmann. And they're still coasting.
Still coasting. And Mbappe definitely delivering, which they play Tunisia tomorrow, so it should be a good match. Then Netherlands, of course, our opponent for this weekend. They beat Qatar 2-0. Goals by Cody Gakpo, which he's making some buzz in Europe. I heard Liverpool's interested, Real Madrid's interested, and Frankie de Jong. Gakpo. How is probably the guy we need to worry about up top, right?
Well, it's hard for me to know. I have a good friend, the editor, my book editor, Esteban, is a big Barcelona fan. And Memphis Depay is really their striker. And they had to play Gakpo in the first match because Depay wasn't ready. I think he came on for a half an hour afterwards. He seems to be rounding into some kind of shape. Look, they're super capable and dynamic, but they're not a world-class side, not entirely. And I thought from the two matches that I've seen, I didn't watch today's match. I was too busy watching our boys. Virgil van Dijk is, do you know how old he is?
I think he is in his late 20s.
No. I checked it out. He's 32.
Oh, crap. I think maybe he's 31. I was about to say 31, but like, I think I gave him
two. You would have been right. He was born in 1991. And, I don't think he's been hurt, but, you know, he's just not the imperious, flawless center back that we are used to seeing in Liverpool the last two or three years. He's aging like we all are. Not you, Santi, but the rest of us are aging. And I think you can see that he's just not as confident and certainly not as swift. They can be had. I mean, that doesn't mean they won't blow us out because they're a very good side. But I can't wait to see the game. It's going to be a real test for Berhalter. A lot has been said and written about his intractability with regard to his alignment and his player choices. I think his hand is forced now. I think some of these people, Pulisic, Sargent, I don't know how McKennie's groin is. That's why he keeps coming off, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. We'll see, you know, how they come out and how they play. They're going to have to change it up. You can't play a tournament and with a system. You have to change that system two or three times in the first round. He's not done that. He's done pretty good, but at some point he's going to have to respond to the moment.
Yeah, you have to adapt in World Cups, and you know, and especially with matchups, different teams. So hey, maybe not start McKennie this time. Maybe start someone else. Maybe put Gio Reyna up top a little bit. We'll find out. Obviously, health issues, and we got 4 days to figure this thing out. So. Comment from Greg. He says, "How is pretty good, but he needs some Inter colors behind him instead of Roma."
That's Barcelona in dark blue there, and the mighty Wesleyan Cardinals in red. There's no Inter or Roma on my wall.
There you go, playing it neutral. Well, there you have it. This Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern. So first morning game. We've all had 2 p.m. games, of course. Over there is at 10 p.m. Looking forward to it. I was telling this someone, if we do beat Netherlands and we head into the quarterfinals, I could safely say how this team is as good or better than the 2002 team.
Well, it's pretty simple. I think if they get to the quarters, I think you're right. And look, anything happened in the knockout round. We don't know how the Dutch played today. I know I don't. We don't know what kind of injuries they're dealing with. Bring it on. I can't wait for it to happen. Are we going to talk about some of these games that are coming up this week? I mean, I've got my standings here. I think I know what's going on.
Yes, we're into predictions.
Oh.
And we can start off with Poland versus Argentina. Argentina has to win, I believe, in order to advance.
They do, and I think they will. The real interesting match to me in that group is Saudi Arabia and Mexico. As poorly as Mexico has fared, they're still in it. And if they run it up on Saudi Arabia, I think they will erase the goal difference issue that Poland now has over them, although they are two to the good and Mexico is two to the bad. So they're going to have to run it up, but they can run it up on that team. And who knows how what kind of whooping Argentina will lay on Poland. I mean, what do you think? Am I just pie in the sky? I mean, I see Argentina taking it to the polls.
Yes, I'm going to say Argentina 2-1. I think that last game against Mexico really brought Lionel Messi out of his shadow a little bit. That goal was impressive. That was world-class. It's all the years he's played on that one goal. And that Enzo goal, I think it was Enzo Rodriguez is his name, had a fantastic. I think that gave a lot of confidence. Poland is not going to be easy. They do have Lewandowski, so they have to make sure they have that defense in tip-top shape. But I think Argentina might win 2-1 or 1-0.
Argentina really misses Lo Celso. I'm a Spurs guy, and I got to know him when he was with Tottenham. A fine player, and boy, he really was a perfect fit for that alignment on the left side in midfield, really. He wasn't playing up top. I think they've got to open it up. I don't see that team being able to grind out victories the way they tried to in the first match. They need to open it up and score some goals.
Mexico, Saudi Arabia, I guess they got to score, at least 3-4 goals in order to have a chance for them to advance?
I have no idea what the Mexicans are going to do. I'm rooting for them. I want them to go through. I want them to play a fifth game, especially if the U.S. isn't involved.
Yeah. But
I don't think they're very good, and I don't think Tata Martino thinks they're very good. I'd be shocked if they lost to Saudi Arabia, but I think while they are certainly capable of scoring, Anything could happen in that game. That's going to be the most fascinating game in that group. I mean, everyone wants to see Argentina play. It could be Messi's last World Cup match if things don't go well. But Mexico, Saudi Arabia, I mean, KSA, they could come out and drop another bomb on us. I mean, that's not a terrible side. And if the Mexicans aren't in tip-top shape and tip-top, you know, confidence, they could be beaten. So I don't know. Anything could happen there. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, Hal's right. This is probably the weakest Mexican side I've seen yet. I'll give them like the benefit of the, you know, just see what they do against Saudi Arabia. Australia, Denmark, they're playing for that last spot. This is a chance for Socceroos to go by. They got three points against Tunisia. Who do you have for that matchup?
I think Denmark is going to trounce them. Australia has already exceeded expectations. They've played two very good matches. They're not very good. That goal, did you see the celebration in Melbourne when they scored against France? They freaked the entire nation out. I don't even know what time it was in Australia. I think that their run is going to end. Denmark is a very solid side, and I expect them to win that one going away. The fun game is to Tunisia and France. I know France has already qualified. I don't know who they're going to run out there against them. If I'm not mistaken, Tunisia can squeak by. Is that right? I mean,
let me double check. Tunisia has 1 point. So, yes, they can, but they have to hope for Australia and Denmark to tie.
And that's not a ridiculous idea that Australia and Denmark would tie. And then if Tunisia scores, a couple goals against France, they win on goal difference. But obviously, Tunisia beating any French side would be a huge upset, but it's not over. So I like it when both games in a group on the final day playing simultaneously have everything to play for.
So let's go on to Thursday. Germany, Costa Rica. Germany had a last minute goal against España, Spain. Costa Rica is beatable. They do. Costa Rica was the first CONCACAF team to have 3 points. You think Germany will take it, or Costa Rica will give them a challenge?
I have no idea what's going to happen there either. Costa Rica, give them credit. They were embarrassed in the first match, and they now have a chance to actually qualify. Both Japan and Costa Rica have really surprised everyone, not just with what they have done, but which they failed to do. No one expected Japan to lose to Costa Rica on the only shot that Costa Rica generated in that game. I'm still buzzing about the Spain-Germany match, which I watched. I thought that was the match of the tournament just from a technical standpoint. That was fascinating to watch. The Germans may have found themselves a little bit playing a team like Spain so straight up and so well they could have won it. But I think that logic says that Germany trounces Costa Rica, Spain handles Japan, and they both go through.
There you have it. Then we got Spain versus Japan. Japan lost their second match, but they won their first match against Germany. Maybe they'll put more of a challenge with Spain.
I'm sorry, I was jumping ahead to Croatia and Morocco. You what was your point?
Japan, Spain. Who do you have for that one?
Oh, Spain. Spain and Germany.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I skipped the 10 a.m. games on Thursday. Okay, let's go. Canada, Morocco. Canada is completely out.
Yeah.
Even though they had good performances, good sparks, Morocco beat Belgium, which I guess you can call that an upset because Belgium's ranked number one. Who do you have for that match?
I'm going to go with Morocco, because Belgium looks terrible. I think something that interesting about this World Cup that really no one's talking about is this is a home game for Morocco. All the North African countries, all the Middle Eastern countries, all the Islamic countries, frankly, the Sunni Muslim countries, they are being supported in these stadia hugely. And Morocco is going to be playing a home game against Belgium. I think that will make the difference. Besides, they're pretty good. They got Ziyech, you know, who plays for Chelsea. He's really a wonderful player. Croatia,
also, Kimi from PSG as well.
Exactly. They're not a bad side at all. They can play. Croatia just, amazes me how they are. They just never go away. They're so difficult to play against. Canada. I love Canada. I really wanted them to win. I thought they should have won against Belgium, but you know, this fellow Hutchinson, who plays defensive midfielder for them, he's 39 years old. And every time I looked up in that game against Croatia, he was running. He was chasing someone in the loping, weirdly bow-legged stride of a 39-year-old man. You can't play in a World Cup with a 39-year-old defensive midfielder. You just can't do it, not for more than 15 minutes. And that cost them two goals that I counted, and I don't know that maybe a couple more. So not a whole lot of depth there in Canada, I think, is the answer. Excellent players going forward. Not enough depth when, you know, your 39-year-old defensive midfielder needs to be taken off.
For sure, Canada will do a lot in 4 years when they're going to be co-hosting with the U.S., so definitely a bright future for them. Croatia, indeed. Old Croatia that beat Canada 4-1 against Belgium. Who do you got for that match?
That's a fascinating one. Could be, well, it's not changing of the guard. They're both old. But I think Croatia buries them. And wow. Lord only knows what the fans will do in Brussels. It's very un-Belgian-like to be rioting because of a soccer loss. There must have been something else going on there. But I saw the film clips. That was a little scary. So I'm sort of rooting for Belgium so there's no more trouble. But I fear that they're going to get de-pantsed again.
Yeah, and Belgium has to win, I believe, to qualify to the next round. So it's going to be quite something. Let's go to Group H on Friday. Ghana versus Uruguay. I'm surprised Uruguay lost against Portugal. That would be a little bit tighter. But I think it's for sure a must-win for Uruguay. And Ghana does have a chance if they win as well. They have 3 points. Who do you have a chance? Who do you think will win that match?
Well, what are the matchups again? Portugal has played South Korea and Uruguay. Portugal has played Ghana and Uruguay. So
yeah.
Portugal plays South Korea.
South Korea, yeah.
I think they will beat South Korea soundly. Ghana Uruguay is going to be a fascinating match. I think if Uruguay wins that match, they have a chance to go through. Their goal difference is now -2. So if they score 2 against Ghana and don't allow any, they're dead even. So I thought Uruguay was really unfortunate against Portugal. They played very well. And did you watch that match? It was razor thin margin of victory there. It was 2 goals. But I don't know. I like Uruguay. They play a really interesting form of football. That's very well. It's like Argentina, the Italian form of South American football. They defend like banshees, but they can get forward. And they're juggling 2 guys, you know, 2 ancient strikers, both of whom, though, are still quite dangerous in Cavani and Suarez. Suarez could have scored a goal right when he came on, just barely missed. I don't know. I would not rule Uruguay out, but I'm going to be rooting for Ghana because I want to see more African teams in the final 16. Uruguay, we've seen, they're sort of changing the guard there. Godin is still playing center back for them. How old is that guy?
He's 38.
Is he that old?
He's that old.
Well, and
he's the fine odds.
And I should have said when we were talking about how old poor Hutchinson is, the Belgians started Vertonghen and Alderweireld. How can the number 2 team in the world be playing 2 center backs that are 36 and 37 years old? And how can a team, a system like or a development system in Belgium that has turned out so many great players, not turn out a center back? At one center back who could take one of those guys' place.
Wow. There you have it. Korea versus Portugal.
Portugal.
Okay. Even though Portugal is pretty much already qualified, but we'll see what Korea does. But maybe Portugal might get those 9 points and secure that first spot in Group H. So and there you have it.
They are not dead. They're not dead. I'm looking at the standings here. Their goal differential is better than Uruguay, but
and we'll see if Ronaldo gets another goal from ahead. FIFA. It was funny because there was so much gossip around it. Like, you know, Ronaldo toed Piers Morgan. Yes, he touched the ball, was his goal. Even Bruno Fernandes said, yeah, that was Ronaldo's goal. And then FIFA's and Adidas said, no, it was Bruno Fernandes.
Well, look, if you've played this game and you've played striker, as I have, all you have to do is make the goalie look at you, and you've done your job. When that ball's coming in, he waited on the ball to be knocked down by Ronaldo, and that's what froze him. So at that point, the ball goes into the corner whether Ronaldo touches it or not. So there was the striker's job is to freeze that keeper. He did his job. Should he get the credit for the goal? I don't care.
There you have it. A goal is a goal. Well, there you have it. Big day today. USA beating Iran 1-0. Hal and I were happy. I wasn't 100% confident about today, Hal, to be honest. I thought we were going to do like a tie, like a 0-0 or 1-1, which it could have happened. But we came out of it. I feel pretty good right now.
Yeah, I do too. It's really fascinating to see how managers handle a situation like that. You know, poor Kirosh, you know, the Iranian manager had any number of things in his head. I mean, he's taking it from both sides. He's trying to fight for his team. He's got political issues at home. He's got issues in the stadium. There's a lot going on. But, you know, he didn't park the bus. He didn't completely withdraw. But, and I think he walked that fine line. When a manager parks the bus, he is maybe tactically trying to get through a group stage, and that makes sense to me. But when you park the bus, you are telling your team they aren't good enough to play. And I don't think that any team wants to hear that unless they're playing, you know, Brazil, when it's obvious that they have to park the bus in order to survive. I don't think the Iranians felt they couldn't play with the Americans. And Kirosh, you know, mainly let them play. But this is why I'm really glad that Berhalter didn't try to do anything like that against England. I think it would have sent the complete wrong message to a very young team. He said, go out there and play him toe-to-toe, and they did. Now, they got the draw. But it's a very difficult thing to ask a team to park the bus, and then if they manage to get through, to go back and actually put any faith in them, you know, the next round. I mean, parking the bus may work tactically, but it's a belief killer, and it doesn't help you in the long run.
The old Jose Mourinho tactic. How? Yeah. What is the best way to reach you online, and also about your book?
I should write that you have at S. Leon. I'm at Mandarin Hal. That's my Twitter handle. And Generation Zero is the modern historic epic of American soccer that you didn't know we had. It's the reason, actually, that we are celebrating all of this success in the 21st century. For 100 years, America didn't do anything in soccer, never amounted to much. In 1989, we turned that all around, and that's what my book is about. The growth of the modern American soccer movement, starting in the 1970s, right up through the shot heard around the world in Trinidad and Tobago, 1989.
An amazing book. Have you seen the Good Rivals documentary on Netflix, Amazon Prime yet?
I saw the first episode. I thought it was fun. I'm really annoyed because that's a book that I wanted to write next. It was a history of the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, and they stole my idea. But they've done it justice, and movies are never as good as books in the long run, so I'm not deterred. But I thought it was great. They shaped it around Landon Donovan and Rafa Marquez. You know, they're the main talking heads. But they went to a lot of old-timers. That first episode was particularly interesting to me because they covered that period in the 70s and 80s when America got good. You know, before then, you know, the Mexicans just toyed with us. There are a lot of great stories from the 80s involving Mexico and their bans from various tournaments, which paved the way for the U.S. in a lot of ways. But they wanted to concentrate more on all the games starting at Dos Acero. I'm assuming how many parts in the series? I don't even know. Do you know?
There is 2 episodes.
Just 2?
There might be 3. I forgot.
If it's three. Well, you saw it. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was really good. And I really realized, you know, with the movie and your book, of how young of a nation we are in world football. It really is how, like, we're like babies still. Well, not babies. We're like teenagers. Let's just say like that. And I'm like, I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and I saw a U.S. team, you know, trying to compete, and I didn't know that was our first decade really competing, you know? Yes, we did have, you know, the Olympics. We did play 1950 and also the World Cup. But this documentary opened up my eyes a lot, and I hope to see more books or movies on the U.S. soccer history, and I think it's necessary. And just seeing this team today, how I'm like, wow, I'm living like we might be entering our golden years. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I think we are. But, you know, you're a young man, Santi. I'm 58 years old. If you are a certain age in this country, you remember how bad it was. And that's really what my book is about. It was like if you grew up in the 90s like Santi did, you missed a great story of redemption. But man, when it was bad, it was bad. And, you know, nobody even knew we had a national team. One of the things that I talk about in the book that's interesting is that until soccer showed Americans how it worked, we didn't really understand international team competitions because we never did them. We'd send teams to the Olympics, but, you know, football and baseball, there's no World Cup for those sports. No one even plays football, U.S. football, outside this country. So soccer couldn't grow unless Americans started to understand that. And that was something else that Generation Zero showed America how to do, was follow an international, you know, tournament with your national team. It was a big step forward.
And you could get Generation Zero on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere online. And you can find the link below this video description and get the book. And hey, this is World Cup time soccer. You want to find out what happened in the U.S. back in the day, get the book, read it, and it's going to be exciting. And now that we're going to play Netherlands, we could beat Netherlands, I think. We can beat them, and that could get things more exciting. And if we do, Hal, potentially, look at the bracket, we could be playing Argentina. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's clear where Argentina is even going to go through from that group. So that's a fluid situation. But yeah. I'm a lot more excited about playing Argentina now that I've seen them play. They're not the juggernaut that we were told they would be in this tournament.
Yeah, theoretically, we'll see what happens. Anyways, you can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1. We got a show tomorrow with Jaime. He gives a European perspective of how are things doing. He's a Spain fan, so we'll see what he says. And then, Hal, I would love to have you back this weekend after the Netherlands match.
Yeah, I may be up country, but if we have internet connection, we'll travel, Santi. It'd be my pleasure.
Okay, we'll definitely stay in touch after the show. And anyways, we're on to the round of 16. Hal, thanks for coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure. Go USA.
Go USA.